Good evening, one and all. Halfway through, over halfway through March already. Where's the time go, I tell you? And here is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, I have been in America now for coming up to 24 years. And no, I don't like it. There is so much I don't understand. There is so much beyond my comprehension. I mean, I always say that when America was being discovered, you know, they're pushing out West and stuff like that. The lasso was one of the cowboys' most important pieces of equipment. Well, over the years, the lasso's gone, and now it's just Sue, Sue, Sue. Or that's what it seems like to me. But then I've been brought up in a country that's had satire going way, way back, centuries, centuries. I mean, Punch has been around, I think, like 1800s, might have been before that, satirical magazine. And programs like The Week That Was and Have I Got News For You and stuff like that, it would never happen in America. It just wouldn't happen. And as for Spitting Image, which won awards everywhere and was a huge hit, straight puppetry satire of political and all sorts of famous figures, dear, that would last about 5 minutes, if that, before the courts were full up. But it's not just that I find in America. It's just that people are stopped from saying things. I mean, you can't tell a joke sometimes before somebody says, oh, how can you say such a thing like that? It's a joke. It's gone over their head. They're way too seriously about things. Anyway, my guest today, he has not just the experience, but he has written a book about comedy and where does it stop? And when does it stop the laughing and start the fighting, about courts and stuff like that, for comedians and that. I better introduce him, haven't I? Because he is a lawyer and authority on comedy and law and the two things together. And now with this book, and he's written another one as well, but we'll get into that a bit later on. I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Carl Unegbu. Hi, Carl. How are you doing?
Hi, Barry. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure, mate. It's a pleasure. You've had your own sort of program and websites and stuff like that about comedy, haven't you?
Yes, sir, I have.
And I mean, as I said in the startup bit there, the issue with comedy in America is that people are scared sometimes to even say something, because they're scared about it going to court, they're scared about being sued and stuff like that. Now you, with your legal experience and that, have now brought this wonderful book out called Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. What brought this about for you to write this?
Yeah, thank you very much, Barry, first of all, for giving me a chance to talk about this book that I feel I could fairly describe this book as my passion project in the recent period. It's called Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. It's a book that has been described by some of the reviewers as a must read for comedians and a should read for the rest of us who are not comedians. Mm. And I wrote the book again as some sort of service to all the lovers of comedy out there, both comedians and non-comedians. Obviously, there are more non-comedians than comedians, you know, in the general mm-hmm. population.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So,
go on.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I mean, it's obviously, you know, with your experience, comedy and, you know, comedy fan and blogger, and then being a New York lawyer, you've seen this from both sides, how perhaps a comedian can say stuff, next minute they're sort of being threatened to go to court.
Yes, and frankly, when I started down the path of covering comedy, I have to confess, I went in there to cover the fun and games of comedy. But as I got into it, I discovered that, it no longer was just all fun and games. There was something now in the mix, lawsuits, which, you know, had become like a part of doing business in comedy, so to speak, something comedians have to deal with. And if you have to allot a time period to this phenomenon, the way it evolved, you could trace it back to, say, maybe the past 2.5 decades, maybe up to 2000, the turn of the current century, from then all the way to today. So, you know, like one generation ago, this wasn't even like a problem in the comedy space. Today it is. There may be a whole bunch of theories about why it is, but for the most part, what is obvious is that comedy has become more important in the social conversation today, the national conversation. It has migrated from perhaps the fringes, say one generation ago, to almost the center of the public square today, especially the political comedy wing of the art form itself. And then, you know, apart from that, comedians also have become, you know, more like celebrities and people of good fortune from the comedy work. So these things together have created a situation where comedy now is like the shiny new object that has gotten into the crosshairs of individuals who are inclined to file lawsuits. And if you talk about America, by reputation, this country is believed to be addicted to lawsuits, and they are. Even though today we have the First Amendment that gives you the right to push comedy and, you know, swing your arms as widely as you could. But, you know, we have that. It's not always, you will find, it's not always that simple, because there are these things about cancel culture and the woke ideology that constrain your ability to, you know, say what you wish to say. Even things that the First Amendment would ordinarily permit you to say. Well, there is a different court out there, the court of public opinion, that may not tolerate that kind of thing anymore. So, yeah, there is that tension there between what the law says and what the public opinion would accept.
I mean, I understand, and I know also, you know, we have had it in England. There was that, Daily Mirror, I think. Didn't they get sued?
Frankie Boyle.
Frankie Boyle, yeah, that's it. Yeah, being racist or something. Racist, right. I remember that, yeah. But, I mean, it's not just what they say either, you know. You've got the whole defamation of character. I mean, you know, business and... You know, you're allowed to say stuff. You know, certain political people seem to be able to say anything without having anything done against them. And yet, here you are, other people, you say one thing, you know, one word wrong, and next moment you're in court. I mean, the only people who are doing great out of this, of course, are lawyers, you know. But then you're on the fence there. But, I mean, you know, what about things like contracts and theft of jokes, even, you know, I'm sure comedians have to be wary of that these days.
They have to be. I mean, like in the book, I start with like how to make the deal for the work. I mean, folks who are very familiar with American comedy, they would know names that have been involved in some of these suits, like Howard Stern and Sirius. Some of the cases I cover in the book, or, you know, Gary Shandling and Brad Grey for Paramount Pictures, or even Dave Chappelle and Comedy Central, or Conan O'Brien and NBC, or, you know, Adam Carolla and Donny Mizrahi, John Lovis and Frank Kelly. I mean, these are all suits that arise from, like, how the comedy deal was structured and the... points that were not made clear in the agreement itself. So I guess the lesson there, the cautionary tale there, is that you know, the deals have to be struck in a way that provide a lot of clarity in terms of what the terms of the contract mean. For instance, I'll just give a rule of thumb.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Like if you're having a deal with somebody, say you go from point A to point B. I mean, folks who live in Manhattan, let's say you want to go from Times Square to Grand Central, and you say, well, you pay the person $50 if they get from Times Square to Grand Central within an hour.
Mm-hmm.
All right, $50. So what happens if the person gets there in 2 hours?
Right.
Will he still get $50? Let's say he got delayed. So he got there and then it's a bit more than 1 hour. Will he still get to $50? Well, the thing is, the rule of thumb there is this. If, like, say you two were negotiating the contract, say, okay, here, you say, well, you get there in an hour, you're going to get $50. And then let's say somebody who wasn't part of the deal, a third party, he interjects and says, well, what if he gets there in, like, after 1 hour, will he still get $50?
Mm-hmm.
If you say, no, he won't get $50, and the other person said, no, I think he will get $50, well, you two are going to have a problem in that contract. That becomes an occasion to really rectify exactly what you mean by the term of the contract, so it doesn't become a problem later. So I guess the thing is, to make everything clear, if there's any question there at the negotiation time that two of you do not have the same answer to, then that's a real red flag, something to be rectified. So I guess that's the example I give in the book, the Howard Stern case. The case about Howard Stern, mm-hmm. when he was negotiating with Sirius Satellite, you know, Sirius XM,
yeah,
for a review. So they said, well, if he brought in a certain number of subscribers, they would pay him a certain amount of money. All right. So when the time came, the period for renewing the contract, I think about 5 years, then the subscriber number changed. It doubled. Now, it doubled because the company had a merger. There was Sirius Satellite, and then there was XM.
Yeah.
So the XM side brought the other people there, so it doubled the number. Then Howard Stern was saying, well, I have doubled the number. Are you going to pay me what you promised? Then the other side said, well, actually, the number doubled, not because of anything you did, but because of the merger.
Yeah.
So that was the thing there. So, like, if you would have said when they were negotiating the contract, say, well, Howard, how about if the number grows, not because of anything you've done, but because they merge in the intervening period? What if in the intervening period, this company does a merger and then they bring in more people? Would you be entitled to get money from those additional people?
Mm.
If they would have said yes, or the other side would have said no, then that would be a problem. I mean, if you remember the analogy I gave you at first. Right. So that's kind of like how you do it. So it ended up being, well, if you wanted to get more money from this additional number, then you have to specify clearly that it has to be your effort and not because of a merger, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, that was the that's one case a lot of people would remember, but, you know, there are lots of cases like that.
Do you find that comedians just aren't knowledgeable enough to know about the risk they face? You know, even to sort of making a comment about somebody in the audience these days, you know, doesn't happen very often, but somebody could, you know, say, oh, definition of character, you know, you said I was bald, you know, for instance, you know, it's
right.
I mean, is it, you know, is it, I mean, obviously, right from the start of sort of hashing out the deal and the contracts, and like you were saying just now, you know, on stage and off stage, I guess comedians could get into trouble these days, but Is it the fact that, you know, they're there to provide for humour. They're there to share their humour. They don't realise that they could very quickly, you know, get themselves into serious trouble.
Yes. I mean, you know, it happens. They don't always know that there are things they cannot say. Because, look, in America, we have the First Amendment that pretty much permits you to say lots of stuff. And but then there are some guideposts, things you cannot say. I mean, things that, you know, might lead to violence, incitement, or things that might be considered obscene, or things that could be argued as fighting words, you know. So apart from those few restrictions, you are pretty much, you know, free to say whatever you want to say, because the guiding philosophy behind the First Amendment is that discussions dialogue, discourse about matters of public policy should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open. So that's the lay of the land. And so much can be said in the first, in America, for instance, the First Amendment puts us, sets us apart from all other societies, including Britain, which is also a free society, Canada, another free society. So the First Amendment has an intervention here. And if you look at some cases that I had in the book, like the case of Frankie Boyle and Daily Mirror. See, in this country, Frankie Boyle would have had a lot more problems winning that case that he won against the Daily Mirror so easily back in Britain. Because of the First Amendment, you know, because in this country, he would be considered a public figure. And it would be a matter of talk about racism and all that stuff in his comedy would become what they call, a matter of a public interest.
Right.
So in that kind of case, it becomes more difficult to win because we have this test here we call the actual malice test. Where you have to show that the person knowingly told a lie or that they recklessly told a lie. Either way, it's a high bar. And a lot of times, cases against comedians and other public figures, they fail on that ground. But in Britain, that case was so like, well, was it true or was it false? And Frankie Boyle tried to like argue something that kind of sounded like First Amendment, but it, that doesn't exist in Britain.
Right.
So they rejected the they rejected the defense by the Daily Mirror about, you know, public interest and all that stuff and public affairs.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much, well, what he said, was it true or was it not true? And that was it.
Right. The book, you know, Comedy Goes to Court When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. Have you had any response from comedians, you know, to it? Do people find it very helpful? And, you know, my goodness, I didn't know the risk I was at and stuff like that.
Yeah, they have, of course, they have. I mean, like, even before the book came out, because the book originated from a blog, really. Most of the folks who read the blog and interacted with me on the subjects being discussed on the blog, they were not necessarily comedians, but they were more like comedy lovers.
Right. Yeah.
And they enjoy, they enjoyed those kinds of conversation about, you know, humor and the public, the public discourse. I mean, part of the reason I wrote this book, like the chapter on free speech, is the chapter, is a book that concerns every person who lives like in a free society, because comedians now become our dog in the fight, the people on the front lines of defending free speech. And the reason is obvious. Comedians, they talk for a living. And when you talk for a living and you make fun of people and you deal with subjects that are either controversial or people don't, people rather not talk about those things about their lives, it makes them uncomfortable that jokes be made about things like that. Let's say their religion, their race, or some problem in their past, some bad historical experience like the Holocaust, you know, or maybe somebody who'd been a subject, you know, a victim of rape. And comedians make jokes about these kinds of subjects because, frankly, that's where the fun is in comedy.
So, I mean, the thing is, people, it's exactly what you said. They're comedians. It's comedy.
Yeah, exactly,
if you don't like it, turn it off. Don't listen to it. Don't go to the show. You know, it's you've got the freedom of choice, and the choice is don't listen.
I know. But the thing is, though, I mean, so because they do those things, they are the first line of defense in terms of the position of free speech today in America in a time of, you know, cancel culture and woke ideology. So they are, in a sense, the canary in the mine about where free speech stands today in a free society. If it happens to them, it could happen to us because, you know, they may be the first line of defense, but the law about free speech wasn't, it doesn't give them any more right than it gives the rest of us. So whatever happens to them could happen to us too.
Yeah.
You know, as somebody has said, if you could protect those who say the most offensive things, then you could also protect the free speech of the rest of us who don't speak so offensively.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So comedians, they fly closest to the sun. And because they do that, what happens to them provides an object lesson, if you will, to what could happen to us. So that is why every person in a free society like America, who a society that is addicted to lawsuits, has a dog in the fight that comedians are waging about free speech. Because, you know, it's a tough thing. And, you know, they get suits from all over. Like Donald Trump one time, he sued Bill Maher, I think in 2013, over some joke Bill Maher made about the color of Donald Trump's hair and an orange orangutan, something I have in the book. And, you know, eventually, of course, Bill Maher won, but, you know, the idea was to sweat him, make him sweat the whole stuff. You know, like, you're messing with the wrong Marine. I'm going to teach you a lesson. So it's sort of like a strategic lawsuit, you know, intended to...
Well, that's what Trump does all the time, to delay things and what have you.
Right. I mean,
that's what he does. Yeah.
Yes.
And then doesn't pay the money, right?
I have another case that is even more egregious, right, along the same line.
Yeah.
A case against that I have in the book, the case against John Oliver, the comedian.
Right.
Over the politics of the Trump administration and the coal industry. And the person who sued him was a billionaire, the owner of the largest coal company in America,
uh-huh,
Robert Morris. So, you know, there was an explosion in a mine. I think in 2007, where some people got killed.
Yeah.
And then there were disagreements about what caused the explosion. The government report suggested that mine safety regulations were, like, not followed, that that might have been the cause. But the billionaire and his side, they said, no, it was an earthquake that caused the explosion. So John Oliver, like, took a shot at this guy on one of his shows, one of the episodes. And the billionaire was testifying before Congress and everything. So Oliver said, well, that this guy is actually a liar. He called him a geriatric Dr. Evil. You know, he made fun of the guy's looks and everything.
Yeah.
So before the show ran, they called Oliver and said, well, you can't run this episode. You know, it's defamatory to Robert Murray and his company, Murray Energy. If you run this show, we are going to sue you. Well, Oliver being Oliver, stubborn guy, he runs the episode. He runs the segment in that episode. And, yeah, they sued him. Well, he won, all right? Because, you know, the lawsuit was not going to go anywhere anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, that wasn't the point. The point was to make him spend money and spend time, drag him around. So by the time Oliver won, and he won early in the game, he has spent more than $200,000on lawyer fees alone. Yeah. And his insurance had gone up like 300%. So that was like the goal, a strategic lawsuit, like, you know, shut a comedian down. So comedians face, you know, lawsuits from all angles.
Indeed,
you know?
I can imagine it. It's getting worse, I think. I mean, it really is. It's, you know, you can't say anything these days to my mind.
No, it's tough. It's really tough. So, I mean, people sue you. Sometimes it's the fan that is suing you. Sometimes, you know, it's a comedy. You know, like Jerry Seinfeld went on David Letterman's show. He talked about somebody who had filed a lawsuit against his wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like something I have in the book, where the lawsuit was over, like, plagiarism allegations that, you know, the woman said that Jerry Seinfeld's wife had plagiarized his book about children's cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
right.
Seinfeld's wife, she won the lawsuit. Now, Jerry Seinfeld goes on David Letterman's show, and he brought up this situation. Then he was criticizing the woman, saying the woman was a wacko, she was crazy, she's a potential assassin and all that stuff. Well, she ended up suing him for defamation.
Yeah, I think you're better off just going up and giving them a smack, like what's his name did at the Oscars or whatever it was. Yeah.
Oh, Will Smith. Will Smith.
Yeah.
Will Smith against this book. Yeah.
Carl, it's been great chatting to you, but time's starting to go. So what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show over to you and have you tell everybody where they can find more about you, your book, and also your first book as well. You know, where all the info and everything can be got from you and the books. So over to you.
Thank you very much. Again, the book is titled Comedy Goes to Court: When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. I mean, obviously, you can always get the book on Amazon very easily, and in your local bookstore, all you have to do is ask for the book. And then if you want to read more about the kinds of subjects discussed in the book, you can go to my blog. It's called O'Carls Law, OCARLS law.com. So I discuss a lot of stuff about not just the law and comedy, but just general subjects, general conversation and comedy as a whole. Like the latest thing there now is the moonlighting story about some journalist who was fired for moonlighting as a comedian. So, you know, I have these kinds of issues covered. Wow. And in general, the book, you know, the book is a book for not just comedians, for whom it's a must read. It's also a book for all of you, because yes, the book has a lot of stories in it, you know, entertaining stories, titillating, you know, like the adventures of comedians and their misadventures and shenanigans. You know, in itself, if you want to read the book for that kind of reason, for fun, that's great. I mean, as somebody said, comedy, stand-up comedy is the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
Right.
So if you can, you want to read it for that reason, that's very good. And it's written in a very easy style, conversational style, the kind of style you could find you know, in People Magazine or the World Famous or Page Six or the New York Post. You know, very easy, accessible language. So it becomes a book you can read on the beach, on a vacation, wherever. Of course, if you want to read the book for the free speech aspects, you know, freedom in a free society, that's even better. So for whatever reason you want to read the book, either for fun or just to learn something about the First Amendment, it's very good. So the book can kind of make you feel like you're watching a show, you know, in a comedy club, or you're, you know, watching a roast on Comedy Central or a Netflix special, because it has lots of wonderful stories in it, apart from whatever the law says about what the comedians were doing. Just the stories in and of themselves, you know, should provide enough entertainment for you. And finally, I have a section in the book about comedians and their relationship with people who are not comedians. I mean, if you're from Britain, I have a case from there where, you know, somebody was going through a divorce and the ex-wife was saying, you know, you can't talk about our failed marriage on the show. Well, the husband said, no. I've been dying for 2 years to talk about this failed marriage on stage.
Right.
So I'm not going to let
you. Right.
So the story there is, if you're marrying a comedian or you're in a relationship with a comedian, it's not like being with a doctor. It's a whole other game altogether.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been great listening to you, anecdotes and everything. And the book, as you say, it's not just for comedians. It's the sort of book that makes you think, adds a few laughs and stuff like that. A real great read. So thank you so much and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, Barry. It's been an honor to be on your show. And thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. How about that? Great stuff, really is. This is the book, as we said, is called, I've got to make sure I get it right, Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. And it's by Carl Unegbu, and that's spelt Unegbu. Great stuff, really good. I tell you, it's the sort of book that, if you have a laugh, it makes you think as much as well, which I think is great, the fact that you can do two things like that. Well, that's it for tonight. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. But until then, as always, we got one thing left to say. Don't forget.